Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable group of people. Special thanks to Renee Feltz, Mike Burke. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 7:59, and coming up next is Positively Revolting.
All I know, I keep making this fooler. I stay protected, that blue steel it do ya. Yeah, my chick bad and I keep the kill bill, yeah. Born and raised, thoroughbred trill. Let's go, let's go. All
I know. Hey, this is Randy West coming from OSP at our annual Yehusasa Talent Show.
Yeah, let me be clear about it. I got it. You way out of pocket. Don't bring this shit here. Getting body back, tipping the bottle back. This is a
This your boy TJ down in OSP, man. I'm telling you, rap music, you know what I'm saying, R&B, you know what I'm saying, got a little bit of comedy up in there, man.
Y'all make sure y'all tune in June 25th at 6:30 p.m. Check out some of these guys from the OSP prison doing their thing, you know. We got a lot of acts and a lot of talent in here to share with the world, so just make sure y'all check that out. June 25th, 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline, y'all.
Tell me, baby, are we gonna let the elevator bring us down? Oh, no, let's go.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio cordially invites you to the Women of KBOO Celebration and Open House on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. It's here at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Join us for the open house and an evening of on-air programming hosted by Barbara Bernstein and featuring Carol Major, Victoria Stapiello, and Maureen Key. We're celebrating the contribution of women volunteers, DJs, on-air hosts, staff, and board members in making KBOO what it is today. Light snacks and drinks will be provided. Everyone is welcome. Again, that's the Women of KBOO Celebration and Open House. It's on Friday, June 29th from 7 to 10 p.m. at KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Southeast Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm.
Support for KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO members and the Oregon Yoga Therapy and Ayurveda Medicine Association, presenting the 6th Annual Ayurveda and Yoga Health Fair Saturday, June 23rd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Tabor Space on Belmont Street, featuring speakers, food, and local vendors. More information at oyaa.yoga.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And you are listening to Positively Revolting here on KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. And it's about 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm Ani, and this morning we are going to be talking about immigration. We're going to be talking about the cruel, inhuman immigration policies and executive orders that have been spun around for the last several weeks, coming to a head this week. And I am very happy to say that Danielle is joining me in the studio this morning. Danielle has been a part of Occupy ICE PDX. That's hashtag Occupy ICE PDX, a group of people who have basically started an encampment around the ICE Center in downtown Portland on Southwest McAdam. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us in the studio this morning. It is an amazing thing that has been happening. So for listeners that aren't clear on what has happened, let's go ahead and give a brief history of the events that have led to Occupy ICE PDX and the start of that encampment. The encampment started on Monday.
Yeah.
And what inspired people to go to the ICE building on Monday to voice their opposition?
I think that it was one thing to actually have deportations taken place. But I think people's hearts are bleeding behind the fact that there are children who are gravely affected by this process. And I think when you hear a child crying for its mother, or you hear about a father being the only provider for their family and he's being taken away after being here for umpteen years and being that family sole provider, it's heartbreaking. And so when you have a call to action, you go and you serve and you let people know that they're not alone. And I think that is the base of why everyone is there.
And so on Monday, about how many people went down to the ICE building?
Actually, Monday there was a very small number out camping, and it grew the second night. Throughout the day, tents started popping up. There's been a massive amount of support. So it's growing every day, and it's amazing. I love it.
It seems to be growing throughout the day. Like, you know, I had read somebody mentioned, you know, Tuesday night, a handful of people, a handful of tents. Wednesday, a bigger handful. Thursday, bam, it's like, you know, doubling.
Yeah.
I was there yesterday afternoon. I was there this morning. Again, more people between yesterday afternoon and this morning, people are joining.
Yeah. I think after night fell last night, we got like 3 or 4 new tents put up. The tents all along where we have them, I wish I had started some sort of time lapse, because it's a beautiful thing how many people are wanting to come and help and support. Where can I go? What can I do? And it's just beautiful. I'm glad it's growing, and people are deciding to come and educate themselves and get an understanding of this all.
And when you're saying it's beautiful, what's the mood? What's the vibe of the encampment?
It's definitely community. You have so many different people working together on so many different levels to make sure people are safe, to make sure we have food, and things like that. And just, I know quite a few people there, but I don't know everyone. And to set the tone for the vibe there, like, these people don't even know me, and they're like, okay, so we got this, that going on. Do you need food? Everybody's just helping, and it's love. And you know, aside from people driving by saying things, it's fairly peaceful.
Right. there are current needs for the camp. And this is the thing that struck me in the short amount of time I was there yesterday. I was standing near, I think it must be the main information booth, and it struck me that in the 15 minutes I was there, probably three or four different groups of people came up to say, hey, what do you need? I just heard about this thing and I needed to come down, and what can I bring you? What do you need? What can I do right now? Are you finding that people are just sort of jumping on, you know, jumping in to whatever is needed, whether they can camp or not? Are you finding people are just, is that a common experience, or did I pick a magical 15 minutes?
I think both.
Okay.
Because in my daytime experience at the camp, there have been people walking up with food, you know, water, camping supplies, money, with no intent to encamp. And there are some that come with food supplies and they're ready to camp. You know, and people who come and they've shown support, or they've missed a max or don't have a ride home or what have you, there's tents available and they've decided to stay. So it depends. Yeah. It's been a mix.
Right on. The current needs that were posted yesterday include things like a ladder or books of bus tickets, so that people who are in, who are camping can also get to day jobs and do the other things they need to be doing with their days. Furniture like folding chairs or things like, you know, you might get comfortable on if you were sitting outside for a while. And so people could bring that down and check in with the info center. For folks that may not know where this is McAdam and Bancroft in Southwest Portland. It's the South Waterfront area. It's fairly easy to find.
It is. I think when you, if you're coming, if you're driving, it's fairly easy to find. I know that the streetcar, which is how I got there, it's very easy to find. My daughter gets up and goes to school every day from in camp, so it's very accessible, very easy to get to. Yeah.
So again, I'm gonna just underscore that for a minute.
Okay.
Your daughter is going to school from the camp, so you're there. Your daughter's there. I saw families there together. And again, a lot of people might think, this is, you know, what are you doing? How do you feel about having your family there? I mean, isn't that dangerous?
I feel very deeply about that, because I feel like if we don't show the kids when we leave, who's going to carry the torch? And while it is a bit of a safety risk for children to be around, and we're adults, we have tough skin, and, you know, we don't want these kids to hear these things. We don't want these kids to see these things. But me being a person of color and defending our Latino community, these kids have been growing up with so much worse than what they might see in a camp that's there in solidarity. And on to put more on top of that, I feel safe there with my child, and I had my younger daughter was there yesterday. I feel very comfortable with them, because when you have all this love, that love creates a bubble of protection for people, and that's one thing that everyone there, it's their main concern, is the children and taking care of the children, making sure they're safe. In the event of anything happening, what have you, we have a safety place for the kids. I am strongly for children being at things like this. It's something that's in my heart to, the kids can sit at home and the parents can educate them with however they want to steer it, because it's, you know, it's a kid. So, but I think it's great for a child to be out and see it raw. And feel those emotions. My goal and my only reason for having my children out there is so that they can, I don't want them to be out there when I'm gone and not know what to do, not know what to expect, and not understand what's going on.
I think that's beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and open the phone lines up, because I know that people are listening that might have questions, that might have comments, that have strong opinions, that, you know, this is, we have talked about immigration on this show for years now, and the inhumane policies and the bigotry and xenophobia involved in how people without documentations may be treated, how the ICE detention centers are private for-profit detention centers, that the incredible problems of them. We've been talking about this for years, but this week it has finally come to a point of actually piercing the consciousness of what seems to be middle America. And so with that in mind, to take this moment and to widen that understanding to help more people understand the history of the inhumane practices and policies of ICE and immigration, this is that moment. So let us talk about this moment in our history and how all together we can do many things to influence and to change this world. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. 503-231-8187. And of course, you can follow along Positively Revolting throughout the week on Facebook. You'll find us Positively Revolting on Twitter. We are Positive Revolt. And so, have you been at the encampment since it started on Monday, Danielle?
I got there Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so,
no, I didn't Tuesday. I'm sorry.
Tuesday.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I know how these things go, and all the days start blurring by the end of the week.
I've lost the days.
I understand.
And I'm okay with that.
I so understand. So you've been there for a few days.
Yes.
And immediately you are helping to keep things organized. You are, people told me to find you when I was like going around and saying, I need somebody to be a guest on my talk show in the morning. Is there somebody that can deal with media? Immediately people are like, go find Danielle. Yeah. And so you have made yourself very much a part of things in a very short amount of time. And I wanted to ask about your inspiration. What pulled you in to doing this?
This specific occupation.
Yeah.
While knowing what's going on with the deportations and the evil that's going on around that, while knowing about that, I didn't know the severity of the situation inside of the places. Not that I wouldn't have come to Occupy, but it hearing the cries and seeing some of the images broke my heart, and at that point it's in my soul to say to myself, well, what can I do? How can I help? And coming down here was conducive to me not going crazy about what's going on.
So actually taking action, as opposed to just, so many people numb out, you know, it's like, wow, that's horrible and there's nothing I can do about it. And what I'm noticing this week is more and more people say, this is horrible, and I have to do something about it.
That is the mindset all throughout the camp. And you have people from all walks of life, a bunch of different nationalities. And I use the word beautiful a lot, because in this one place, that one camp is what I wish that America could be like. Where everyone comes together and there's no evil. Unfortunately, there always will be, but I use the word beautiful often about this Occupy, because the people there and the mood and the vibe around there is community.
I'm gonna talk for a moment about our mayor. I don't think I've really spoke approvingly so much of Mayor Wheeler. I had that glimmer of hope when he first took office, and he He said that, you know, Portland is a sanctuary city and will do whatever is necessary to protect the people of Portland from Trump's regime. It's sort of a paraphrase there at the end, but it was pretty much right about what he said. And since then, I've been like, where was that guy? And who's this in the mayor's office? But, you know, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there that the that Mayor Wheeler has told the Portland Police Bureau to let the feds handle the ICE protests. This is actually from Blogtown, from the Mercury. It's been reported in pretty much all of the print presses in the Mercury and Willamette Week in the Oregonian. But basically, the upshot of it is that Wheeler has said that the policies are wrong, and that it's a federal issue, and he doesn't want the Portland police to actively be involved because it would see he would see it as them supporting these Trump's zero tolerance policy. Yesterday, Wheeler announced, yesterday being Wednesday, because this article came out yesterday, Wednesday, Wheeler announced he wouldn't be asking the Portland Public Police to engage with ICE. It's a federal agency that he believes is, quote, on the wrong track. Michael Cox, who is a spokesperson with Wheeler's office, says, while the mayor can't give tactical direction to the police bureau, he has given strategic direction. His thinking is this is a federal agency on federal property with its own law enforcement agency. We don't need to get involved. What have you seen in response from the Portland police, Danielle?
So far, while I've been there, I've seen some drive by. We've not had any actual contact. None have got out of their cars to engage at all. Which is a great thing, you know. These occupations happen, and Portland police aren't so nice about it, which is kind of eerie because I was wondering where they were because I felt them in the air. I know they were coming. So when I first got here, I was like, "Well, okay, we're kind of sitting ducks." But hearing that about Wheeler making such announcements. It's kind of a catch-22 for me because, like, all right, what are you planning? Right. You usually beat us up.
We've learned not to trust the police.
Absolutely.
Even if the mayor seems to say that they shouldn't be involved in this.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I also kind of feel that reflex. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead. We have a call. We have Tim, who is working with Gorge Ice Resistance in the Dalles. And as we know, the Dalles is one of the major detention centers for the area. So good morning, Tim. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank Danielle.
Thank you.
For all the work you're doing. We have some folks who traveled down there last night who are standing with you, and they'll be there, I think, tonight again. Of our people.
I met them, beautiful people, and I thank them for you guys and all your work you're doing in the Dalles. It's beautiful up there, and I appreciate it. I do.
Well, we have some good news.
What do you have?
We've been on the street for 417 days. Every day.
Since May of last year, I believe I heard that from one of your comrades up there.
Yeah, and so yesterday we forced the administrator of NorCor to resign. He won't admit that, but it was public pressure and shaming that got him to leave.
I think we both just got chills up our spines. That is some great news.
He was a major impediment to our community working for reform in our public jail. He is named in a lawsuit by four taxpayers in Washington from Wasco County, which will come to trial June 11th. That's the date that we've been given. If people want to come and pack the courtroom in Wasco County.
Do you mean July 11th?
Excuse me, July 11th.
Okay.
Yeah. like Danielle saying, all the days run together.
I hear you. I absolutely I definitely do.
So I just want to put a shout out to you guys down there. We're with you 100%.
Thank you.
Some of our team is going down to talk to people in Columbia County, in Salem, in McMinnville. There's mutual aid happening everywhere around the state. So
it's been wonderful. I'm glad to see myself all of the action uprising from various parts of particularly this region.
We are example to the nation. It's happening everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Full court press. Don't look away.
Right.
We'll keep up the good work. We'll see you now.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for your call this morning. Well, there's some news. Let's go ahead and talk to Deanna. Good morning, Deanna. You're on the air.
Aid happening everywhere around.
Hello, Deanna.
It's been wonderful. I'm glad to
see this is this is that 40-second delay. We'll get back to Deanna, who will catch up in real time to us momentarily. But while you're waiting on hold, it's good to turn down your radio because then you won't be surprised. Let's go ahead and talk to Karen instead, right up here. Good morning, Karen. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Thank you both, Danielle. And is this Annie?
Yeah, it is.
You're welcome.
I didn't hear the beginning of the show. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But I wanted to thank everybody. I'm with the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, and we've been involved in twice a month demos outside of ICE for over a year, but that's great. But we've also I'm with a Quaker Sanctuary cohort. We've also tried to do specific things like fundraising for the Dreamer Center and at PCC Rock Creek, and we've been working on getting a bond fund going, and you know, lots of visits to various offices of senators and congresspeople, mm-hmm. and et cetera. But I just wanted to say, I wanted to frame what's happening, or at least put forward a tentative idea for a frame. I heard on air the other day that the treatment of immigrants, the separation of mothers and children, was another baby step on the way to this authoritarian state. And mm-hmm. I think it's worse than that. I don't think it's just a baby step.
Mm-hmm.
It's Nazi-esque. And the reason I'm so frightened is because I'm also Jewish, and I've heard survivors talk about how it began in Germany with taking away the men at night and then requiring money to get them out of, say, Dachau, right? And then eventually that didn't work anymore because they were taking more and more Jews into the camps, and it was getting harder and harder for Jews to have any access to money. And so after they raised money from this horrible suffering and scapegoating, then they had another way of dealing. And that's what really frightens me about what we're seeing now, is that it looks like, okay, we're trying to bail people out. It costs $500, something like that, to get an ankle bracelet and get out of detention. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you're paying to have your own shackle on, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And while they can get money, why not do that? Why not make them pay more for that, right? Why not make them pay their bonds and so on? What's going to happen further down the road with this scapegoating of people of color? And of course, African Americans have suffered enormously for many, many years. And I'm just trying to put it into a larger context. Am mm-hmm. I seeing it the right way? Is this what's happening? You know, what we know that I call him T-Rump, like T-Rex, right? he really wants to be, he's a wannabe dictator.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is how wannabe dictators behave. They find people to blame, to separate us. That's mm-hmm. Danielle, the fact that you're doing what you're doing is wonderful.
Thank you.
A lot of it has to do with the fact that you're not being separated, you know, from what's happening. And so I just am putting that out there, that this is a very serious time that we live in. And
absolutely.
And yes, and thank you again. Thank you for Ani for having this program and for doing all that you're doing. I hope you have a wonderful day, both of you.
Hey, thanks very much for your call. I absolutely agree that I think that we've seen signs. We talked about this a little bit last week when I was speaking with a member of Antifa. We've seen signs that this regime has taken many, many cues from other authoritarian regimes. I used to have that idea that, you know, basically as soon as you say, oh, like Hitler, you kind of lost the argument. Mm-hmm. Except this regime actually seems to be following the playbook, right? Mm-hmm. And to not see those to not see those analogies, to not see the comparisons, is dangerous at this point. It's a little like sticking your head in the sand and hoping for the best, and that don't work.
I like, are you that naive?
Right. You know, and there are, you know, the strong man, the big lie. These are tried and true tactics, and you'll see once again Trump has pushed sort of it's the weather balloon, right? Mm-hmm. So first we have this absolutely cruel policy violating international law of tearing children away, infants away from their families, mm-hmm. Right? And so that goes on for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, more. And then there's this huge public outcry. And then we get the resident of the White House saying, now we'll just incarcerate the whole family mm-hmm. together. Because suddenly that's going to seem more
humane.
Right? And something that would be completely unacceptable mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a little bit better. Right? It's not. It's the idea is to detain indefinitely families looking for asylum who are fleeing in fear for their lives.
Absolutely.
Right? Horrendous situations. To detain them without process, to close the doors to asylum seekers, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Period. And that needs to be addressed overall. So I'll pull back a little bit there. Ooh. But that just, again, I think to not see the comparisons and to not get an idea of what he's doing strategically, you know, you do something so heinous that suddenly you're doing something that is also heinous but different. Oh, maybe it's going to be more acceptable. Mm, and it's not. We have to be smarter than that, right? Mm-hmm. We have to be savvy. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And let's see if Deanna has caught up to us. Good morning, Deanna.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Ani, thank you for that last business that you just said, and I absolutely agree with you. We do have to be on the lookout for that, you know, these switching tactics and trying to get everything to calm down and so forth. But before I say anything else, Danielle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And please thank everybody at the occupation. I was down there Monday and Tuesday, but I'm not staying there. But I do want to know some things from you, if you feel free to say them on the air.
Okay.
And that is, are you in the General Assembly's planning what the future steps will be? This is such an important leadership role that you all have taken. Look what it's done. National news, Democracy Now. Everyone knows what you've done, and it's had an effect. Even if it's only temporary, it has shut down that center.
Absolutely.
Personally, I would like to see us all mobilize around every single detention center in this country and force them to let those people go. I think our demands have to be really high. I saw the night when I went down there, abolish ICE and blank white supremacy. I know I can't say that on the air, so mm-hmm. I didn't.
Anyway, that was actually my banner, by the way. That was my banner. I'm glad you spoke on it.
Well, I took a photograph of it and put it on my Facebook page for whatever that's worth.
It's worth everything.
Sent it out to people across the country whom I know who are not here. But what I want to ask is, as great as this is, we mustn't let this momentum drop. As Ani says, this is a moment that has to grow into a life, what can I call it, space. What you said about the community, so important. It's where people really come together. We're off of our, well, we're not off. I'm sure we're not off of our phones, but we're offer than we usually are when we gather together, right? And as you said, it's people from everywhere in every walk of life and probably every age and nationality. So I'll shut up and listen.
Yeah, we had a three-week-old baby out there. fighting for his little baby life, it seems like. But I, again, going back to parents and why you have kids down there, I think it's important for the children to understand that you were a part of the history that you're reading about. And guess what? You have the tools to fight the powers that may be when all of us are long gone. So I think having your children down there and having them at the vigils and the different rallies and things like that, it's just educating them and giving them tools. And I feel like people should be more open to allowing themselves and allowing their children to be a part of things like this.
Thanks very much for your call, Deanna.
Okay. Thank you.
All
right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. You can call in with your comments, with your questions. What are you thinking about the immigration policies, the executive order that that Trump has decreed this week, detaining whole families together? What do you think about the fact that we have tender age shelters that press members are prohibited from examining? What does it mean when the same resident of the White House that is doing all of this stuff that looks like it's straight out of a playbook for an authoritarian regime is consistently attacking the journalists and disallowing access of journalists? What does that mean when we read all those signs together? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. 503-231-8187. This is Positively Revolting. You're listening to KABU. It's your community radio station. I'm Ani, and this morning my guest in the studio is Danielle. Danielle has been working with hashtag OccupyICePDX. And that is the encampment that is currently underway around the ICE detention headquarters in downtown Portland. And there is news, actually, of other ICE offices and ICE detention centers around the country that are now receiving some action. We heard from Tim and the Dalles earlier, who've had a daily presence, daily vigil at the Dalles Detention Center, a major holding facility in the area, for over a year now. And some other great news from Tim, but also we're seeing families occupied the ICE headquarters in New York. There's actions happening around the country as this movement is growing. And so also I want to let you know you can follow us all week long on Facebook, where you can find us Positively Revolting, and you can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Let's go ahead and talk to Lynn. Good morning, Lynn. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
My comment is I've been calling Kate Brown, Earl Blumenauer, trying to get through to Ron Wyden, Jeff Merkley. And, you know, I just haven't heard any. I heard a public statement by Kate Brown this morning, but what about Merkley and Wyden? Haven't heard a thing about all these immigrant children being detained in Portland. And of course, these nonprofits are making a heck of a lot of money on this.
That's and I have just started hearing more about this yesterday. That apparently the Morrison Center is contracted to hold child detainees. Yes.
Also, the YWCA.
Really?
Yes. They're holding and teenage boys behind the Brooklyn Art Museum.
This morning I heard on NPR just how wonderful detention was at the Morrison Center. And so, you know, as I said, I'm really concerned that I'm not hearing anything from our wonderful centers or senators or my representative Earl Blumenauer on this situation.
I have heard I have seen Earl Blumenauer and Wyden both speak out strongly against the detainments. I have not heard them speak about specific facilities in the Portland area holding youth. And so hopefully, and with pressure, we should, you know, always talk to our reps, right? Because Merkley actually was one of the people to help break this open when he was turned away from a detention center. Right.
You know, and the fact that all this federal money is filtering into Oregon, I wonder, were our representatives aware of this? And this didn't just start yesterday.
Yeah. No, it did not.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I urge everyone, call your reps and say, this is immoral. We don't want it happening in Portland. We don't want it happening in Oregon. We don't want it happening anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have read that Blumenauer actually broke down in tears talking about the policy. This is actually pretty common this week for any person with a heart and soul. It's hard to talk about this stuff without weeping. It is so unthinkable. And yet, at the same time, it is disingenuous to think that this is a precedent in our country's history, right?
Right.
And it is so important. I want to call out to white folks in particular, because I hear a lot of folks, a lot of white people saying, you know, this is unthinkable. This is not the America I grew up in, but it is, actually. And before we can really effectively take action, we got to get rid of our own denial, right? We got to come to terms with our legacy and our history and knowing that this is a continuation of devastatingly inhumane policy, right? That we have done this with Native American communities. We have done this with Black communities. Mm-hmm. And now we are targeting Latino communities. It is a continuation of the genocidal policies and practices that this country was founded on.
You almost want to ask, which nationality is next?
Right.
Unfortunately.
Right. Or which population? You know, maybe it's going to be class next time. Maybe it's going to be political ideology next time. Maybe it's going to be, I don't even know what. Right?
There's no telling.
And there's no bottom. It's the authoritarian regime is running and it is attempting to gain its momentum. And we know how dangerous that is because we know some history, right?
Very.
So first, if you're saying, wow, this can't happen in my country, understand that it has been happening in this country.
Happening.
And also understand that we have, just because it's been happening doesn't mean that lets us off the hook. Oh, well, it's been happening all this time.
Right.
No. In fact, it is important to sit with that pain and anger and outrage, knowing our history, and use that to fuel your action, because it is...
Action.
It is time to stop the cruel and inhumane treatment that has happened in marginalized communities. Right now, we're focusing on the immigration policies. We're focusing on ICE. I'm noticing at the encampment, there are signs that bring other issues together. You know, as you said earlier, Danielle, people are looking to have a good, to create a better world for each other to be in.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about that and how people are talking about a little bit more broader issues, bringing different issues together?
And within the encampment as far as moving forward?
Yeah.
So we have progress we've made. We've met goals, and I think that in moving forward, it's a day-by-day process, because we don't really know which way to go.
Right. Well, I mean, for example, I'm like seeing signs about white supremacy. I'm seeing signs about trans rights. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing signs where people are, well, I actually heard people talking to each other about disability access.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, so I'm seeing that there are folks who are educating each other and pulling different, looking at the intersectionality of oppressions, basically.
In one small space.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the diversity in there is what's, I think, what's making it tick. And that was brought to my attention. I think you may have been standing there. We need accessible bathrooms for people with disabilities. And so every day, when you have someone like that, that nicely tells us, but when you have someone like that that tells us, hey, you know, this would be a great improvement, all those things help us to move forward and sustain our position when it comes to this current call to action.
Let's go ahead and talk to Lori. Good morning, Lori. You're on the air.
Morning.
Good morning, Lori.
I'm hoping you can hear me.
I can.
Perfect. I've been down at the camp pretty much nearly every day, and I brought my daughter, one of my daughters, with me. I have two. So I agree that, you know, mothers with children, it's a welcoming space, and it's a space where children need to be. And mothers and children need to speak up about what's happening around them. And so that was a really great thing. But I had called Merkley's office yesterday, and what I think that our representatives need to do, and all the Democrats and Republicans who are behind us on this, is they need to go down to one of these centers, and rather than passively turn around and leave when they're told to leave, or passively walking through and obeying rules, which one of the problems is everyone wants to obey rules, they need to stay or actually remove these children or remain inside of these facilities, and until they can physically take these children out and get them to the proper parent. And I don't, if it means they occupy, you know, and specifically I would hope they can get into one of the, I don't want to call it a tender age facility. What's the word tender? The word tender is trying to make us feel a little calmer about it, you know, tender, as if.
Yeah, euphemisms need to be struck.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And let's face facts, a tender age shelter is really a baby jail.
I was just going to say
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, the press should quit using the word tender age. Just go ahead and use what it is, baby jail.
Yeah.
You know, concentration camp.
Yeah.
And just because they're being fed does not mean it's not a concentration camp.
Modern day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and in fact, we've seen footage of tent, you know, a concentration, there was really no other word, that a detention center built of 10-person tents that is going up as quickly as they can put it up in Arizona, right? And this is, again, you know, for children to be housed in. Not okay. Not okay. Thank you.
And I just think that, I mean, that just that, they have to be more aggressive, and they cannot turn around. And if that means that they get thrown into jail themselves, all of our representatives, congressmen, mayors, they need to take that risk.
Right. Thank you so much, Lori, for your call this morning. I want to give a shout out because I couldn't help but notice 50 licks ice cream came down on the 19th. To support the protest, and you know, credit where it's due,
they were very gracious.
That there they were. I love the fact that they have no fascists on their menu, and
I love it.
And that they were passing out some ice cream.
For free. Yeah. And it was like 1,000 degrees.
It was a warm day.
It was very warm.
503-231-8187, the number to call. And good morning, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Ani and Danielle. So happy to hear this program, not
good
because
morning.
The news is happy, but because it's so exciting to have so many people taking action. I haven't been down there. I've been having some health things that keep me from being down there, but I've driven by and honked my horn as loud as I can.
Thank
and
you.
Gotten great reception, and it's very exciting. I wanted to go back to the thing about Morrison Center.
Mm-hmm.
My mother worked for Children's Services for 28 years, mm-hmm. and one of the things she did towards the end of her career was she was the regional person who had responsibility for certifying any kind of center that held children. And there's lots and lots of laws around how you can hold children, especially in a group setting. And so Morrison Center is certainly, they're not exempt to that because they've got a federal contract.
Right.
They're running it here in Oregon. So there should be, at the very least, somewhere in the Department of Health and Human Services, evaluations on these centers and things that tell you what they should be doing with different age children, how many workers they should have. You know, they're making these no contact rules, which are mostly the kind of thing I've heard when they have teenagers in care together and they don't want sexual contact, so they forbid hugging among the children.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're doing that for younger children and those children aren't receiving any kind of touch,
no affection.
I believe that would be a violation of their care.
Well, I feel like it leads to a mental disability later on in life because you have so much trauma. I think, unfortunately,
absolutely,
these kids are going to suffer from a severe level of PTSD and develop a lack of trust, I believe, for mankind because they're being treated like this by people who are supposed to be here to protect us and make sure that we're taken care of and things like that, and yet they're being thrown
absolutely
in cages and treated like animals.
And I think there's got to be some leverage in the fact that they have to be certified to give this kind of care. There's got to be some leverage from Oregon social workers or from, you know, put some pressure on DHS, you know, because these are institutions that can say this can't exist here anymore. They can close
right
these places down if they're not meeting their contract. But if their contract is something that allows harmful behavior, that's another leverage we have for getting into it. So I just want to bring it up for those people who wanting to know, you know, what can you do about something like this? You know, from my perspective, what I heard it said was they were taking in unaccompanied minors, which might be young teens and teens who do come to the border on their own hoping to reach a parent, and they get tracked off, you know what I mean? Maybe they have a parent or an aunt or an uncle up here, but they get tracked off, and then they're in these centers for long periods of time.
Yeah, and the unaccompanied minors, that the detention for unaccompanied minors has been happening for a long time. The thing that has changed in the last 2 months is, of course, the taking of minors away from their parents at the borders. And
I think that's participating in their trauma if you facilitate that. So I'm just thinking out loud with you all about ways and other ways that we can get at this and actually take action that could help these children.
Right.
I don't think that the general running of a place like that would have people who aren't generally very positive about their charges. That doesn't mean there's not lots of exceptions to that. But the other thing that concerned me was when I was in social work here, not since the last 15 years, but we had laws in Oregon about who you could keep in secure settings, and you couldn't keep a non-criminal, a young person who had not done pretty much a violent crime, because we had had a history in Oregon of locking up girls who were considered incorrigible because they were fighting the abuse they were receiving in their homes is really what was happening. And so that got reformed in the 70s so that you couldn't lock girls up except under extreme circumstances. So I'm wondering what the hell those kids are doing in a secure facility.
Right. Well, again, that has been going on for a while. It's a damn good question. And thank you very much for your call this morning. It's super important, and looking at the licensing for any facility that's holding youth and for any facility that's holding youth, period, mm-hmm. is super important. And especially in this case, we're, especially now.
Right.
Let's go ahead and talk to Barth. We just have like 3 minutes left. Barth, really quick here at the end of time.
Sure. I thank you for your show again, and good morning.
Good morning.
What can we do to support the encampment is my one question. The other part to tag along with hers is, if we have standards that are not being met, how can we agitate for that to be followed up on? And is this the kind of country you want to call your own, people? Do you think that this kind of behavior is acceptable? Not even good behavior, but acceptable behavior.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take that stuff off the air.
Okay, Barth, thank you so much. Let's go ahead and start with, how can people help?
I feel like bringing yourself down there, or your family, your kids or your friends or what have you, with you, again, and just educating yourself on what's going on at the occupation and the reason why we're there. And just come show support, you know, whether you're bringing food or supplies or things like that. You don't have to bring something to come and join us. I want people to know that. Also, there is security. There are safety measures being taken. We have space designated for the children. For people who don't smoke, there is no smoking inside the encampment, for people who worry about that. And every day, making it livable for everyone that's there is the goal. And we're having our GAs, and we're making plans. And so I just wanted to encourage people to come and support.
I have to say, I was super impressed with how clean and how very ordered things are.
Thank you.
It was easy to find different... it was easy to find the information booth. It was mm-hmm. easy to get information from the people staffing the information booth.
Thank you.
I am impressed with the organization efforts of the people who have been involved with this encampment. And I think that it's important that we keep each other informed of what's going on. Again, that information booth has a current needs list. I know that yesterday on the current needs list was a large whiteboard, a ladder, games, you know, so that people can sort of keep occupied, as it were, and that sort of thing.
I wanted to say something about that. As far as the needs board at the information booth, that is updated every hour.
Yep.
So as to not have, you know, so much stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, we want people to feel like welcome and not overwhelmed. So
absolutely. So so it's good to check in with that information booth if you are looking at current camp needs. And with that, we are out of time. Danielle, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting. We appreciate you. And stay tuned. Next week, we will be back with more. Who knows? Who knows what happens in this next week? It's anybody's guess. But we'll be here together facing it. Good morning to you all, and have a good week.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8000. 8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of SEMA, Sacred Dance of the Whirling Dervishes, Sunday, June 24th at 3:30 p.m. at the New Expressive Works in Portland. The SEMA ceremony will be presented by the Mev Levi Order of America to honor the mystical poet Jalaluddin Rumi. The mystical journey toward perfection is symbolized in this ceremony of whirling prayer directed by the Posnishan Jalaluddin Loras. The musical ensemble will feature the Ney, Odd, and Kudum, as well as vocals. Again, that's SEMA, Sacred Dance of the Whirling Dervishes, Sunday, June 24th at 3:30 p.m., at the New Expressive Works, 810 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's crawling up on 901 AM, which means One Land, Many Voices will be presenting an interview with Richard Falk, former United Nations Special Rapporteur on Palestinian human rights since 1967. At 10, Valley Views takes a look at the practice of dry farming. Followed by Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein.